Good morning, everyone. Great to see you guys today. Part three of our series, Heroes and Villains. Next week is Easter. We are already at Easter. Wow. This year is moving by fast, a little earlier than it typically is. So last Sunday in March, Easter this year. Wonderful opportunity for you to bring your family, friends. People still respond pretty positively to an invitation on Easter Sunday morning. We would love to have them here. We'll do everything we can to present good news to them and to love them and give them a great experience while they're here. Also, this will be my last shot at being able to talk about our Easter offering that we are receiving next Sunday. This is an opportunity for those of you who consider FBC your home to assist us with resourcing your church. We're growing. People are connecting. More and more people are calling Forest Park a place that they want to connect with and bring their family to. So as the people increase, of course, resources need to increase as well. So next week, just consider. This is not high pressure. Nobody's going to, you know, feel one way or the other, whether you give or don't give or something like that, but just consider being as generous as possible and give above and beyond. We've got some envelopes in the back of the seats, different colors, and we would really like for you to take one of those. Talk with your family about it. Go ahead and plan on what you're going to do. Also, one more thing before we jump into part three. Those of you watching online, you can consider giving as well. If you call Forest Park your home and you watch online, whether you're here in our area or somewhere else. We had two generous people this past week give an early Easter offering, and it was so helpful because it went directly to purchasing a new computer we needed to be able to help with the online audience. Some of our computers are getting a little dated, a little slow, and that was able to go to help in that area and also audio here at the church. So when people give, it really helps make a big difference. It's not going to sit in some big pile somewhere. We don't have a big pile somewhere. It goes into ministry and goes to doing the different things that we have here. So thank you, thank you, thank you for all those who are so faithful with this. All right, let's jump into part three of our series, Heroes and Villains. I'm a Billy Joel fan. Anybody else in here a Billy Joel fan? A few of you? Okay. I have loved his music through the decades. In my opinion, he is an artist, poet, and musician all wrapped together and stands above much of the repetitious and predictable music of today. Whether you're a fan or not, it's pretty amazing when you consider he has sold more than 160 million records over the course of a career spanning four decades, six Grammy Awards, nominated 23 times, inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Billy Joel is one of the most popular recording artists and respected entertainers in the world. Since signing his first solo recording contract in 1972, he has achieved 33 top 40 hits. Even more amazing to me, he wrote every single one of those top hits. It's pretty amazing as a songwriter and a singer and musician. That's talent all rolled together. But in 2007, Billy Joel released his final new music, and from then on, fans were listening and re-listening to all his classics. So fans were thrilled when in 2024, after 17 years without any new music, Billy released a single, Turn the Lights Back On. As many of his songs, there are multi-layered meanings when you listen to this song, when you listen to the music and the lyrics and the tone in his voice, you realize he's singing about lost love, life regrets, and his music career that has somewhat been sleeping for the last 17 years or so. I love the song. I've heard it over and over and over again. I drift into the lyrics and the meaning and the emotion of it all. I want you to listen to just part of the lyrics to this song. Here's how the song begins. Please open the door. Nothing is different. We've been here before, pacing these halls, trying to talk over the silence. And pride sticks out its tongue, laughs at the portrait that we've become, stuck in the frame, unable to change. I was wrong. Then the chorus says, I'm late, but I'm here right now. Though I used to be romantic, I forgot somehow. Time can make you blind, but I see you now. As we're lying in the darkness, did I wait too long to turn the lights back on? From my perspective, it's a song of self-awareness. It's about waking up from slumber and recognizing the truth about who you are and what you've become and regretting lost years, lost loves, bad choices, missed opportunities, and then wondering if it's too late for me. Can I come back? Can I turn the lights back on and start again? It's good stuff. I want you to hear me very well. Becoming self-aware is possibly the single most beneficial leap toward wholeness one can take. And it is also one of the most painful experiences one can endure. Why? Because within self-awareness, you see yourself in the bright light of truth. Most people do not see themselves in the bright light of truth. Most people see themselves in the thin cover of image management. Self-awareness occurs when you strip the curated images away and see yourself as is, maybe for the first time in your life, when your strengths and weaknesses become clear, when your motivations are revealed, when you see how you treat others, when your selfish desires are no longer hidden, when your dishonest language is exposed, when your fears are confronted, when your insecurities are laid open, when your deceit is dissected and displayed for all to see. And for the first time, you get raw and transparent, and you say, I want to change. I want to be different. And finally, you are willing to be transformed. You are willing to humble yourself and apologize and make things right. But as Billy Joel says, you wonder when you're lying in the darkness, is it too late to turn the lights back on? This is why self-awareness is the single most beneficial step toward wholeness and the single greatest painful experience rolled into one. Unfortunately, for many of us, it happens late in life. For some of us, too late in life. In fact, for some of us, it takes a tragedy to awaken us from our slumber, or a series of failures, or we simply get to the end of ourselves through butting our head against the wall, and on one of those butts, we become aware. Self-awareness is a sobering experience. It shocks you out of the slumber and sleepiness you've grown accustomed to and places you in the cold wind of reality. The earlier this occurs, the better. In fact, if I could, I would help you become fully aware in your 20s. Because the earlier you become self-aware of your weaknesses, of your strengths, of your sins, of your insecurities, of your pain, of your trauma, of your patterns, of your habits, of your addictions, of your hang-ups, of all the things in your life, the earlier you become aware of that, the longer you have for transformation to occur in your life. Quickly, I want to show you a glimpse of this awakening in the life of one of the disciples by the name of Peter. This is not our main passage, but it is an important one, and it serves as a great illustration to this occurring in the life of someone that we look at as a hero of the faith. Peter, let me give you a little background. Peter was a skilled fisherman. He had been trained by his parents and family to fish and fish well and how to fish, and he had just finished a night of frustrating fishing. He worked all night and he caught nothing. He tried everything. He pulled out all the stops. He pulled out all the different kinds of bait. He used all the tricks that he knew how to pull in fish, and he did nothing that night. So he comes in that morning. He's tired. He's disappointed. He's disheartened. And this is the story that we find in Luke 5. Jesus was standing on the shore of Lake Gennesaret, teaching the people as they crowded around him to hear God's message. Near the shore, he saw two boats there, left there by some fishermen who had gone to wash their nets. Jesus got into the boat that belonged to Simon, or Peter, and asked him to row it out a little way from the shore. Then Jesus sat down in the boat to teach the crowd. Now, the reason they did that is because the water would help to amplify the voice. They didn't have PA systems at that time, of course, so they would row out a little bit into the water. As they begin to talk, the water would help to, you know, cause the voice to go a little further into the crowd, and they could hear the speaker on the boat a little bit better. When Jesus had finished speaking, he told Simon, row the boat out into the deep water. So you can see they were in shallow water, roll it out into the deep water, and let down your nets to catch some fish. Now, let's just stop there for a moment. How do you think Peter felt in that moment? He had fished all night. He was exhausted. His eyes were probably swollen from lack of sleep. He was tired. He was doing his best to pay attention to what Jesus was saying. He's in his boat. He's let Jesus borrow the boat. And Jesus is like, hey, Peter, I want you to row out into the deep. and I want you to let down your net. We're going to catch some fish. Now, the response of Peter here, which comes next, and we're going to get to it, comes from a man on the verge of self-awareness. He is in the process of seeing himself raw and unfiltered. He's not there yet, but he's moving in that direction. Listen to what Peter says to Jesus' request. "Master," Simon answered, "I don't know if you know this or not, but we have worked hard all night long and have caught nothing. Nothing. I used my best nets. I've used all kinds of bait. I've gone to this side of the lake, that side of the lake. I've done everything. The school of fish, they're just not here. Maybe they'll be here tonight, but they're not here. They were not here last night. I've done everything. But I tell you what, if you want me to do it, I'll do it. We'll row out, we'll throw down the nets again, and we'll see what happens." They did this and caught so many fish that their nets began ripping apart. Then they signaled for their partners in the other boat to come and help them. The men came, and together they filled the two boats so full that it began to sink. Imagine Peter's response. When this occurs, Peter realizes how little he knows about reality, how ignorant he still remains about faith and trust and humility and Jesus. The school of fish jumping into the net after Peter had fished all night, after Peter used his knowledge of fishing, his experience on the water, his resources as a fisherman, now the fish just jump into the net because Jesus lets down it into the water? That challenged everything Peter thought he knew. And Peter is thrown into an existential crisis, a clash between what's real and what's not, between this world and the world to come, between the will of Peter and the will of Jesus. And here's how Peter responds to this moment. When Simon Peter saw this happen, he knelt down in front of Jesus and said, "Lord, don't come near me. I am a sinner." In that moment, Peter saw himself in the true light of Jesus. In that moment, Peter realized he was not interacting with a talented teacher or a high-level leader. He realized Jesus was more than a really good magician or an illusionist. Jesus didn't have fishing experience in his background and pulled out some trick that he learned years ago and caused the fish to jump in the net. Peter understood Jesus had the ability to just speak to the fish and they would respond. Peter was in the boat, not with a mere man. He was in the boat with God. And all of Peter's frustrations and doubts and insecurities and sins and imperfections were exposed in the light of the purity of Jesus. And the only thing he knew to do in that moment was back away from that light as quickly as he could and said, "Get away from me, I'm a sinner." You see, when the villain part of you is seen, I mean really seen, and you realize that the villain that's inside you eats with you and sleeps with you and influences your thoughts and motives and desires and responses, it can be quite alarming, even depressing. It might happen when you're sitting alone in your living room or sleeping alone in your bed, you're thinking in the dark, and for whatever reason it occurs to you, "You know, I've made every imaginable excuse my whole life. I have blamed other people, I've pointed fingers at other people, but the reality is I am responsible for the failure of my marriage. I'm not the only reason, but I certainly played a part." That's sobering. It might happen when you can't enjoy much of anything without a drink or a few pills before you do something recreational. And at some point it occurs to you, I'm more addicted to this stuff than I thought I was. And all of a sudden, you just had this awakening. Or you can't work on your computer without checking out a sex site before or after, and it finally occurs, what's going on with me? Or when you feel alone in a crowd, and you realize you don't really have any friends, and it's not because people aren't friendly, it's because you don't know how to make friends, or you're just too hard. People don't know how to interact with you, and it occurs, you're it. You're the reason. or when you're depressed and you've never dealt with your stuff, you've never dealt with your family drama, your false beliefs, your abuse as a child, and now you're getting older, and you wonder, is there still time for me? The awakening might happen in a variety of ways, accompanied by a variety of emotions, because no two awakenings are the same, because no two people are the same. Some people respond to this awakening unwisely. They begin drinking or taking too many pills or 100 other vices to numb themselves from the light, to blind themselves from the purity of the truth. They become convinced another different relationship will solve all their problems. So out with the old and in with the new. They drown out their thoughts and emotions by staying as busy as they possibly can and keeping life as loud as they can take it so they don't have to hear the voices. Some do the opposite and throw themselves into super spiritual stuff. They switch out one addiction for another one. Now it's church and God and religion. And a few make the final decision and end it all. So here's the question for today, okay? Here's the tension. What does deep, lasting, genuine soul renovation look like for someone who recognizes all the mess inside, all the broken parts, all the messed up pieces of themselves? What does it look like for God to refurbish and repair and rebuild and restore a villain? Obviously, I'm not going to be able to answer this whole question today, so I'm going to slice off a little piece of it and kind of examine it up close, because it can be quite discouraging when you feel more like a villain than you do a hero. And today I'm going to give you some inside information, all right? Stuff that I've learned about me, things I've learned about people, things I've learned about the renovation God uses in our life. Why? Here's why. Three big ideas. I'm going to break these down quickly for you, okay? The first one is because I want you to know what's happening inside of you when you don't know what's happening inside of you. Okay, I'm going to tell you what's going on inside you. The emotions, why you feel the feelings you have, the frustrations, the emotions, the disruptions. I want you to understand why you feel angry and sad and frustrated and confused. I'm going to speak to you about that quickly. The second thing I want to do today is I want you to understand the process of how transformation works. In other words, how God goes about changing you. And thirdly, I want you to be encouraged and not lose hope, because most people do. And I don't want the people of FPC to be like most people. I've been in a lot of churches. You ain't like most people. And that's a good thing, all right? So let's go through those three quickly, all right? Number one, what's going on inside me? I want you to get to know yourself a little better, that self-awakening that I talked about at the beginning. This is not too deep. We're wading into shallow water, but it is enough to get your feet wet. So when we look at you, when we have a casual conversation with you, whether that's here in the auditorium, in the lobby, on Facebook, you know, on Instagram, at a restaurant, just casual conversations with you, when we look at you, when we get to know you a little, what we see, what we discuss, what we get to know is not all there is to know about you. I told you, it's not too deep. That's pretty shallow. There are layers upon layers of your personality and motives and dreams and goals and behaviors and beliefs that we have no idea about. The best way I know to look at that is this image of an onion. People are like onions, layers upon layers. We see the outside, we interact with the outside, but there are other things about you that are true. As you can see, as you get lower and lower, you've got perceptions on the outside, and then as we get a little lower into you, we get behavioral patterns, and then personal choices, and then internalized values, and then we get to the very center of who you are, and that is your core beliefs, and what you truly believe about yourself, not what you say you believe, what you actually believe about yourself, what you believe about God, what you believe about people, what you believe about the world, what you believe about everything operates your entire life. It's all coming out of the inside, but a lot of us don't know what's in the inside. We've never sat down and even evaluated what's really on the inside. We interact with the outside, not the inside, because the outside is what everybody sees, what everybody enters. Let me help you with this. I'm gonna help you with your marriage, help you with your girlfriend, boyfriend, friends. I'm gonna help you with everybody you know. Okay? People are layered like onions. What you experience about someone is what they present on the outside, the outer layer. What you see is true about the person, but it's far from everything about that person. You marry the first layer. You live with the layers underneath. You hire the first layer. You partner with the layers underneath. You become friends with the first layer. You build a friendship with the layers underneath. And it takes a while to get to the layers underneath. That's why at the beginning, everything's like the honeymoon, and then you get to the layers underneath, and you realize on inside, there was rot. On the outside, everything looked great. On the inside, it was falling apart. It takes a while to get there. But it gets deeper. What you think you know about yourself is not all there is to know about you. Most people are utterly ignorant about themselves. And I am convinced it takes most of one's life to get to know oneself. You simply don't know what you don't know. Here's a simple image that'll help you with this. Some of you are familiar with it, the Dunning-Kruger effect. On the left-hand side, we have high confidence, but we have low competence. You ever met a 20-year-old that absolutely knows nothing about life but thinks he knows everything about life? That's the person on the left. Do you have a teenager in your home right now who knows everything there is to know about everything else but has absolutely no education, no knowledge, no experience? That's on the left. Now, let me just tell you, I'm picking on 20-year-olds and 16-year-olds, but there's a lot of 45-year-olds that fall into that exact same category, trust me, okay? But here it is in life, when you're around, 15, 18, 20 years old, you are high with confidence how much you think you know, but you are super low with how much you actually know. This is life. We start out around, 20. I'm just going to kind of put an age here. I'm just making these ages up. This is not based in research. It's just kind of my observation, and it makes it easy to remember. Around 20 years of age, you think you know everything. You've got all this confidence. You're ready to take on the world. The world ain't seen anybody like you. You're going to win everything. You're going to come across. You're going to be number one. Your marriage is going to be better than anybody's marriage. Your business is going to be better. Everything. You got it all figured out. And got any competence, but you got a lot of confidence. Then you hit some snags. You bust your nose a few times. You fall. People walk out on you. The girl you thought you were going to marry breaks up. The guy you thought you were going to marry, finds somebody else. Around 30, 25, 30, whatever. Oh, there's more to this than I thought. You're coming down the confidence, but you're gaining competence. You're starting to know some things. Then around your 40 mark, you just kind of get to almost to the bottom, and you're just like, I don't think I'm ever going to understand this. And then you bottom out. And everybody bottoms out at a different time, but you bottom out. Maybe around 45, 50 years old, you're just like, I don't think I know anything about life. But you've got a lot more competence, but your confidence is going down. Then you start learning from your mistakes. You start paying attention. You start humbling yourself. You start saying, you know what? There's other people who know more than I do. You know what, God? Maybe your word is true. You know what? Maybe the principles of Scripture actually are real. You know what? Maybe there's people who know more than me. Teach me. Show me. You start reading. You start listening. You start paying attention to your weaknesses and your problems, and you clean your nose off the blood, and you start saying, you know what? I'm ready to learn now, and your competence starts going back up, and your confidence goes up too, maybe around 50, and then 60, 70, you kind of look back on life and you go, was it easy? No. Was it complicated? Yes. Your confidence never gets to the top again, but your competence is pretty high. And when you figure out life, you die. So there you go. All right, so anyway, I think that's kind of the way it is. When you finally figure it out, it's all over. I wish it was different, but that's pretty much the way it is. But that's life right there. That's life. There's things about you that you don't even know about yourself. And it takes life, and it takes falling, and it takes marriages, and it takes businesses, and it takes money that you lose, and it takes friends that walk away, and betrayal, and everything else. And you finally get like Peter. Just, I don't know half of what I thought I knew. Humility. Also in that, our childhood, our teenage life, our young adult years, we absorbed This is who you are. I'm going to tell you who you are. We absorbed a whole lot more than we think we did. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Most everybody's familiar with the term secondhand smoke. That's when someone else smokes. You're not smoking. They're smoking, but you inhale the smoke that they have. You know, they blow it in the air. You smoke it. You didn't really. Passive smoking, involuntary smoking. You're all familiar with that idea, that term. What had also happened when you were a child? Not the smoke, but the anger in your home. The disappointment in your home. The arguments between mom and dad, you absorbed. You absorbed all the tension. You absorbed the yelling. You absorbed the pain. You absorbed the anger. You absorbed the betrayal. You absorbed the conversations that they had. You watched how they interacted, how they talked to you, your friends, what they said about you, other people in your life, if your home was secure or insecure, if you were affirmed or not affirmed, if you were neglected or not neglected. All of these and more affected you, shaped you, had a role in making you the person we see today. And most of us are not aware of that. So we just go buy some new pants and a new shirt and cut our hair and lose some weight and feel as if we've got it figured out. We ain't got it figured out. We need to have that awakening moment. So you are a multi-layered person, and most people are overall ignorant about who they are underneath. So let's get to the question everybody wants answered, right? How does transformation work? Let me go real quick. Number one, it's not magical. I'm going to tell you straight up, it's not magical. There's no magical prayer, no magical formula. I wish I had a magical prayer. You wish I had a magical prayer. Because if I had a magical prayer that would transform you and transform your family, some of you would bring your husbands up here right now. You'd bring your wife up here right now. You'd bring your parents up here. You'd bring your kids up here. There is no magical formula. No person has the touch to change your life. No super anointed extra spiritual man or woman of great faith and power can pray for you and suddenly you're different. It doesn't work that way. It's also not instant. It's not instant. You can't decide in one moment to be healed and whole. No one can give you a quote or a thought or an idea or a scripture, and all of a sudden everything is fixed and repaired. Again, it doesn't work that way. And it's not secret. The church over there, this book, that author, that pastor, that teaching, that podcast, they don't have a secret recipe. There's truth in all of that. There's principles in all of that. But there is no secret recipe, and someone else has it, and if you can get it, suddenly everything in your life is different. That's not the way it works. Let me tell you what the truth is, okay? Here's how transformation works. Transformation is a long, winding, deep, slow, and sometimes frustrating process. That is the truth. Now, I want to show you something that will help you immensely if you will allow it to. In the book of Exodus, chapter 23, God is speaking to the Israelites. He is assuring them that if they follow him, obey him, worship him, instead of the idols in the surrounding nations, not because God is an egomaniac, but because he knows what's best for them. And he says, if you will worship me, not all these other idols, if you'll follow me, not follow all these other gods around you, then I will fight for you, and I will drive out your enemies, and I'll make sure you win. Now, you need to know this. When you read in the Old Testament about the tribes and the people groups and that the Israelites battled on the outside, the Hivites and the Canaanites and the Hittites and all these funny names, they represent what we battle on the inside today. You could exchange their names with real enemies that we deal with on a daily basis. Rather than the Hivites, addictions. Rather than the Canaanites, call them anxieties. Rather than the Hittites, call them sinful family patterns. Whatever. What the Israelites battled in the wilderness wanderings, we battle in our world today. Different names, same struggles. So in Exodus 23, God says, I'll go before you and I will fight for you. Watch this verse. Exodus 23, God says, I'll send insect swarms in front of you and drive out the Hivites, the Canaanites, and the Hittites before you. Now let's change that, modernize it into our world today so it'll kind of sound a little bit more like the way we live. I'll send insect swarms in front of you and drive out the addictions and anxieties and sinful family patterns before you. But watch this carefully. This is gold to me. When I understood this, watch what God says. I'm going to do that. I'm going to drive all those things out of your life. But I won't drive them out before you in a single year. So the land won't be abandoned and the wild animals won't multiply around you. I'm going to drive them out, but I'm not going to drive them out too quickly. Because if I drive all those things out of your life too quickly, you won't be able to handle it. Your emotions, your family, your habits, your systems, that you, all those things have grown up around you, and you would not be able to handle it if I drove all of them out at one time. Some of our marriages rest on some real broken systems. Some of our friendships, some of our habits, some of our addictions, some of our jobs, some of our ways of thinking are all intertwined in some good, bad, and ugly things. And if God drove them all out in one night, a lot of our life would fall apart. Do you know what God does? This is what God says. I'll drive them out before you, little by little. Little by little. Little by little, until your numbers grow, and eventually you possess the land. Character formation, heart change, release from the burdens of our families, breaking sinful family patterns, learning to love instead of hate, forgive instead of judge, happens little by little. So slowly, some people quit. Over 30 years of ministry, I have watched people start and stop, and as soon as things didn't change fast enough, they walked away. As soon as change wasn't within a certain frame of reference, they quit, almost saying, I'll give this religious thing a few months and see if it works. If it doesn't work, I'm on to something else. Let me just help you. You might as well stop right now. Just quit. Just save your time driving here, sitting here for an hour, save your money, save everything. If that's how you think about it, just, because I'm going to tell you, nothing worth anything happens quickly. It took you years. Sometimes it took your family decades to develop the mess you're in. I promise you, it will not change in a few weeks or a few months. This is little by little. It's little by little. It's sermon by sermon. It's conversation by conversation. It's tear by tear. It's laughter by laughter. It's friendship by friendship. It's group by group meeting. It's book by book. It's prayer by prayer. It's day by day. It's little by little. And over time, eventually, you possess the land. So, how do we stay encouraged? All right, I want to give you some positive, helpful truth. Here's how you stay encouraged, all right? You don't quit, first of all. Hebrews 12. So then, say it with me out loud. With endurance. With endurance. With endurance. With endurance. Let's also run the race. Run the race that is laid out in front of us. Since we have such a great cloud of witnesses surrounding us, we can stay all day on that one last phrase there, the great cloud of witnesses. Who are those people? The people who've gone before you. Last week we talked about Samson. Then there's David. Then there's Solomon. There's the great men and women of faith all through the Old Testament. All the disciples, when this was written, all that Jesus had already born, died, resurrected, the disciples were part of the witnesses. Peter, who got his foot in his mouth, and then out of his mouth, and then in his mouth, and out of his mouth, and fell down, and stood up, and walked on water, and sank, and denied Christ, and loved Christ. He's a great Christ, part of that witnesses that says, if you just stay in it, if you just keep going, if you just stay in there, and you don't quit, with endurance, with endurance, with endurance, run the race, run the race, run the race, you'll make it. And then the writer of Hebrews says, let me give you some advice. Let's throw off any extra baggage. Let's get rid of the sin that trips us up. Let's fix our eyes on Jesus, faith's pioneer and perfecter. Because you know what? He endured the cross. ignoring the shame for the sake of the joy that was laid out in front of him and sat down at the right hand of God's throne. Keep your eyes on the one who did it. With endurance, with endurance, with endurance, run the race. With endurance, throw off baggage. With endurance, get rid of sin. With endurance, fix your eyes on Jesus. With endurance, throw off what? Throw off baggage. What baggage? Anything that slows you down. Anything that slows you down. I don't know what that is in your life. You got to figure that out. What slows you down? What's the baggage in your life that slows you down? Behaviors, relationships, attitudes, habits, whatever it is. Throw it off. Throw it off. Throw it off. You're in a race. Throw it off. You don't need it. Throw it off. You're trying to accomplish something here. Throw it off. You're in the game of transformation. Throw it off. You got something to win here. Throw it off. Sins, walk away from them. I can't tell you what those things are. You got to deal with that. What are the sins in your life? What are the things that slow you down? What are the things that impede your running? And then center your attention on the one who went before you, Jesus. Let me give you this little side note that I'm going to close. If you know anything about the Israelites, I talked about them a moment ago, you know, fighting all these Ite people, Hivites, Hittites, Jebusites, Canaanites, all that. 40 years in the wilderness, 40 years. Why 40 years? Lots of different reasons why. There's books written, articles written on it, but let me give you the shortcut here. 40 years in the wilderness. One day, God takes them out of Egypt. 40 years they're in the wilderness. Why? Because it took one day to get them out of Egypt, 40 years to get Egypt out of them. It's a long process. They had learned a lot of bad habits while they were in Egypt. Their hearts were divided. They didn't trust God. They didn't believe. And God had to get it out. Get it out. One day at a time. One day at a time. Now here's my last point, and we're done. And this is going to be encouraging. Real encouraging. When Jesus embraced you, when he took you, he took all of you. All the layers he took. In all the stages of your life he took. Jesus doesn't take you in sections. God doesn't take you in pieces. He took all of you. The parts of you that you don't even know about, he knew and took you. The parts of you that shock you when you find out that's true about you, doesn't shock him. He took all of you. He didn't take the pieces you know about, and then as you learn more about yourself, and then you get them all right, then he takes those parts. No, no, no. My friend, he took you 100% as is. And when a layer comes to the top, and you're like, I'm so ashamed of this, I'm so embarrassed of this, oh God, he already knew it. It isn't about him being more proud of you. It's you. Are more proud of yourself. You are throwing off some more baggage. You are getting rid of some sins so that you can run the race faster. You're his child. There ain't no layer in that onion that makes you not his child. He takes all of you. All of you. That's the truth. So stay in the race. Don't quit. Keep moving forward. And over time, little by little, you'll possess the land. Let's pray. Father, thank you, thank you, thank you for this truth. I pray you take this and just put it so deep within us that it literally changes who we are and we walk out those truths. Father, I know that there are some of us in this room, we're ignorant about who we are. Others of us are at a different place in life. We're starting to see some things about ourselves. Others of us have moved beyond some things and we've laid them down and we're running a little lighter today than we ever have before. And Father, you're with us every step of the way. You will never leave us. Even when we fall down, even when we take a break, even when we sit down and say, I don't want to run anymore, you never leave us. You never forsake us. You're with us all the way through. Remind us of that. Encourage us and help us keep moving. And one day, one day, one day, we'll see how we possess the land. And you did it little by little. Amen.
All right. I told you it was a good message. It was a tough message, though. I wish that it wasn't a process. I wish it didn't take forever. I wish we could just snap our fingers and be better. But I guess it's a good thing I'm not in charge. Could you imagine if those of us who struggle with the size of our love handles woke up tomorrow and were just like 100 pounds thinner? Just woke up and just didn't fit in anything that we owned? Skin just flapping? So maybe don't do it my way. Maybe we'll put our faith in Jesus to do this. But I'm grateful that we have a pastor who's brave enough to tell us the truth of God's word, that it is a process. Transformation takes time. When I first came to this church, I remember a pastor, I call them handkerchief pastors, that invited me to come down front and throw off my sinful coconut and made like a loud yell that I would be free if I did that. It was super, super comfortable. It was very fun to do that in front of a bunch of strangers. But we don't have that. Things have changed. In fact, if you are new here, hopefully nobody made you feel uncomfortable. Hopefully you had a good time. In fact, we have a gift for you if it's your first time here. You can scan in the barcode up there, the QR code, fill out your information, and then stop by the New Here area on your way out. And they have a gift card to the Cracking Coffee House downtown, so you can go grab you a coffee or a refresher or treats, or they got all kinds of good stuff. Okay? Last thing is next Sunday is Easter. So this is the biggest day of the Christian calendar. Okay, this is our Super Bowl. But most of all, if you have anybody in your life that you know needs some Jesus, that person, they need them some Jesus, well, now's the time to invite them. So we're going to have a special message just for people who are not used to coming to church. We're going to do everything that we can to welcome them, to make them feel welcome without being uncomfortable at all. We've been working really hard. There's lots of things that we've got doing. So this is the best time to invite people. Most people who would never go to church will accept an invitation on Easter Sunday. So give it a try. If you've got family members that you love, friends, coworkers, whatever, we're going to have a photo booth set up, so at the very least they can put on their Sunday best and get pictures that they can post on social media all year. So that's when I update my cover photo every year is Easter. So I got to watch what I eat this week so I can look good in the pictures. But thank you guys. I hope you had a great Sunday, and I hope you have a great week. I love you.